Okay, we're going to begin here on the top of Kuf Amud Aleph, 8 lines down. The Gemara is discussing the definitions of terminologies that we use, including apikoros and a person who is Megaleh Panim B'Torah. The Gemara had different options before as to what Megaleh Panim B'Torah was. Given what the definition of Megaleh Panim B'Torah was, then it gave a definition for apikoros. So one of those definitions that worked out for the one who believed that Megaleh Panim B'Torah is someone who offends or is offensive towards a Talmid Chacham, then Apikoros was someone who's Mevazeh Chaveiro Lifnei Talmidei Chachamim, which we discussed yesterday. But according to the other one who says that Mevazeh Chaveiro Lifnei Talmidei Chachamim is the definition of Megaleh Panim B'Torah, then you need another explanation for what Apikoros is, because then, of course, subsumed under Megaleh Panim B'Torah would be the offensiveness towards a Talmid Chacham himself. So here were a couple of suggestions. Rav Yosef's suggestion could go on Hai Damrei Manahanu Lan Rabbanan. Like those that say, did the Rabbanan do anything for us? They're really not worthwhile. We don't need these people to learn Torah. The Rabbanan are not additive in any way. We saw Rava who brought a story that related to the family of Binyamin Asiya, Binyamin the doctor, who also had this attitude towards the Chachamim, that what did the Chachamim do for us that we wouldn't know from the Torah? Or what chidushim or benefits are they bringing to us? And Rava speaks about personally how he used to respond to those individuals when they brought questions before him, that he'd make sure to note for them, listen, I'm doing something that you wouldn't be able to do without a Rav. And so you need to acknowledge the fact that we're making a difference, because if you just follow the Torah, then these answers or what I'm saying would not necessarily come from the Torah itself. So that was Rav Yosef, seemingly backed up by Rava. On the other hand, Abaye says that is also called Megaleh Panim B'Torah. That's not called an apikoros, because that is subsumed under, and he brings psukim, and Rav Nachman Yitzchak also brings a pasuk that say that they're subsumed under these psukim, and that's part of Megaleh Panim B'Torah. Then, what is an apikoros for Abaye? But Papa, his Talmud, actually suggests that it is someone who speaks in the Rabbanan in a dismissive fashion. Someone who says, Kanon Hani de Rabbanan. Those rabbis doesn't speak in a respectful manner about the Rabbanan. So it's not directly that he's Mevaze a Talmud Chacham. It's not Mevaze Chaveiro b'fnei Talmud Chacham. It's not even saying, what do we need the rabbis for? Just the way he speaks lacks the proper or the requisite respect that he should have. Calls him Hani Rabbanan. The Gemara says that Rapapa himself slipped up once and said, Kanon Hani Rabbanan, those rabbis, referring to other Rabbanan, which he felt was inappropriate, and then he himself fasted to atone for the fact that he had spoken, or the slip of tongue that led him to say something like that in a dismissive manner. That was an apikoros. Now we have another option for that, which is Levi Bar Shmuel of Rav Huna Bar Chiya, Habukah Metakne Metabchot Sifrei de Beit Rabbi Yehuda. They were fixing the covers of the Sfarim in the Beit Midrash of Rabbi Yehuda. Seems that they were doing it in the presence of Rabbi Yehuda. Kimatu Megillat Esther. When they got to the Megillat Esther, they were fixing the cover of the Megillat Esther. Amrei, they said, Ha Megillat Esther, Lo Bayi Mitpachat. So here, truthfully, there are a number of ways to read this. You could read this as a statement of fact, which is, Megillat Esther doesn't need a Mitpachat, doesn't need a cover. You could read it in the following manner, which is, HaMegillat Esther lo bayi mitpachat? This Megillat Esther doesn't require a cover, meaning that it was, in a sense, a rhetorical question. Or, you could just simply read it as a question. HaMegillat Esther lo bayi mitpachat? They were querying of Rav Yehuda. You could read it all three ways. And the truth is that Rashi brings one of those ways, and then Riyad Ramah brings two of the other ways that we just noted over here. So that the problem is the way they are addressing their Rebbe. And that's Amar Lahu. He says to them, Ki ay gavna nami mechze ki afkiruta. Speaking like that is the equivalent of an afkiruta. Afkiruta comes from the word hefker, which means that you are shirking responsibility, throwing off the yoke. So Rabbi Yehuda says to them, if you speak in this manner, it's dismissive. And that belies either an underlying problem, which is that you don't have a veneration for the Chachamim and the Mesorah, and maybe even Torah Shebaal Peh, or it just shows a certain lack of understanding of where you stand vis-a-vis the Talmud Chacham or the greater person at door. And so Rabbi Yehuda says to them, what you're saying is problematic. The reason would depend on how you read the previous part of the Gemara. If you read the previous part of the Gemara as a statement, then the reason he's saying it's an Afkiruta is you're making a statement in front of me instead of querying of me and asking me a question. Why are you telling halacha as if that's the given and looking at me? Because if you want to ask the question, ask the question. So that's one possibility. The other possibility is that they ask the question rhetorically. It's the equivalent of a statement. Wow, this Megillat Esther, lo bayim pacha, doesn't need a cover. And that doesn't need a cover. It was as if they're answering their own question. The last possibility is that they did ask the question. Does this Megillat Esther, lo bayim pacha, doesn't require a mitpachat? And they posed it as a question. And this Rashi seems to be saying, but they only posed one side of the question, which is that they almost led the question into the answer. If they really wanted to ask a question, they should say, what is the story with the Megillat Esther? Does it need a mitpacha or does not need a mitpacha? Give both options. And Rabbi Yehuda would respond. By the fact that they asked the question in a one-sided manner means that they are presupposing what the answer should be to the question. And that was the problem, which is you're not really asking a question. You're stating a question as if it's a given that that's going to be the answer. This is the way that the question is going to lead. One of those three reasons would be why there's a problem over here. Again, it would all depend on how they said the question or stated the question. That would lead you to understand what the problem was. But the common denominator is a lack of proper veneration, respect for Rabbi Yehuda in the way that they presented the question. The question of Megillat Esther probably has to do with a Gemara that's in the beginning of Shabbat and in other places that deals with which books are Mitami Yadayim. The Chachamim were gozer that holy books, the Sfarim of Tanakh, would be Mitame Yadayim. The reason that was is because they used to store the Sifrei Kodesh together with the Truma. They said, well, Truma is Kodesh, the Sfarim are Kodesh, let's keep them together. What ended up happening was that there were pests or things that came with the deterioration of the Truma, when things go bad or foods or storage goes bad, and then they were ruining the Sfarim that were there. So what the Chachamim instituted was that the Sfarim are Mitamei Yadayim, because then it would ruin the Truma, and be problematic for the Kohanim. Then they wouldn't store the Sfarim together with the produce or the Truma. That leads to a question about which books are Mitamei Yadayim, which of the Sifrei Tanakh. So there are controversies around certain of the books of Tanakh, whether they were canonized or not, including Shira Shirim and Megillat Esther happens to be one of those. Many of the Megillot, there are questions about Qohelet, Mishlei, all of these, the Gemara deals with different opinions amongst the Tanaim as to whether they were part of the canon. And likely the question here being asked over here or stated over here is whether Megillat Esther has the same status as the other Sfarim. That could be from two levels. One is that it's Ketuvim versus Torah and Nevi'im, which we know that Ketuvim have a different level. And maybe even vis-a-vis Limud HaTorah, because we see that the Gemara speaks about the reading of the Megillah vis-a-vis learning of Torah, which implies that reading the Megillah is not Limud HaTorah, is not Talmud Torah. So from that perspective, we know that the Megillah or Megillat Esther is on a different level than Torah and Nevi'im, all the Ketuvim in that sense, but also from the perspective of whether it was in the canon or not, whether it's Mitamei Yadayim. So it could be from either one of those perspectives, they're asking that question, and that's why they're saying something about the cover of the Megillat Esther would be different than the other Sfarim. Rav Nachman Amar, Zeh Kore Rabo Bishmo. This Apikores, or this Afkiruta, is someone who calls his Rebbe by their name. Shomer Ploni, Veinu Omer Mori Rabbi Ploni. You have to have the salutations that come along with speaking about your Rebbe, which are Mori Rabbi, my master, my Rebbe, so-and-so. You don't just say so-and-so. Maybe it's not even enough to say Rabbi so-and-so because he's your Rebbe. You have to say Mori, that he is my master in the sense that he's my teacher. He is my Rabba Mupak. And so addressing the Rebbe in an inappropriate manner is the same problem that we're seeing all along over here. It is the way that you interact with the Chacham that's indicative of a problem, either vis-a-vis that particular Chacham, vis-a-vis Torah Shebaal Peh. It's not clear, but there's something wrong there, and it's inappropriate to address them in that way. Damar Rabbi Yochanan Mibnei Mananash Gehazi. Why was Gehazi punished? Mishmei Shekarala Rabo Bishmo. Because he used to call his Rebbe by his name. Shinemar. Because it says, now, what's interesting about this is, when was Gehazi punished? It's seemingly Gehazi is punished before all of this takes place. Gehazi it is possibly punished in one of two circumstances. One circumstance is the situation with the Isha Shunamit, where he's unable to revive the child, and Elisha himself has to come. So Chazal over there looked negatively on Gehazi, that he didn't follow the instructions of Elisha, and therefore he wasn't able to revive the child, and they discredit Gehazi. You can't argue that the reason Gehazi couldn't do it is because Hashem wanted Elisha to be there and to do it in person, so then it wouldn't necessarily be negative for Gehazi. The second one is the time where Naaman is cured from his tzarat, and Gehazi, after Elisha lets him go and takes nothing from him, Gehazi chases him down and says to him, you know what, Elisha changed his mind, why don't you give us some stuff? And then he goes and pockets it for himself, takes it for himself. And Chazal claimed that the perek about the Arba Mitzoraim, that we read as the Haftorah for Parshat Mitzora, was about Gehazi and his three children, that he was afflicted with the Tzarat of Naaman, which is the curse of Elisha. And then the story about the Arba Mitzoraim, which is completely anonymous, Chazal connect to Gehazi, that Gehazi had done something wrong. Post that, the Navi speaks about a case or a situation in which the king of Israel, son of Ahab Yehoram, asks of Gehazi, why don't you tell me some of those great stories about your Rebbe Elisha? This is all afterwards, which is interesting because Rabbi Yochanan in other places in Shas speaks about the fact that Gehazi did tshuva, and that Gehazi in the end did recover from his tzorat, and then was returned to his former state, and that might be borne out by the story in Melachim Bet, where Gehazi is found speaking to the king. If he was in Mitzora, then he wouldn't be in the king's palace, he wouldn't be speaking to the king. The fact that he is speaking to the king seems to indicate that he was cured, or something happened that took care of this issue of the Tzorat that he had from the curse of Elisha. In Elohim Cain, over here, you have another member from Yochanan, which seems to indicate that this happened beforehand. It says, why was Gehazi punished? Because he called Elisha by his name, Shinamar. Here he's telling over the story to the king, how the Elisha revived this child of this woman who had passed away after the miraculous promise that she would have children after not having children. And then he says here, Vayomer Gehazi, Adoni HaMelech, Zot HaIsha, V'zebna Asher Chiya Elisha. In the middle of the story, and the woman herself walks in with her child. And he goes, that's the woman, and that's her child that Elisha brought back to life. She happens to be coming back to petition the king at the time because she had lost her property. Elisha had told her that there was a famine coming and that she should leave the area and go set up shop somewhere else because there's going to be a famine. After the famine subsides, she comes back to reclaim her property and people have taken away from her. They've stolen the property and she no longer has her property. She's coming to petition the king to say, I want my property back, can you help me? She comes at that moment that Gehazi is telling the story of Elisha to the king, and he can't believe it. He goes, that's the woman, that's her child, the story I'm telling you, there they are. But the way he expressed it is, Asher Chiya Elisha. That's when Elisha brought back, he didn't dress Elisha like he should have with a reverence for a Rebbe, my master, Elisha. So that's why Rabbi Yochanan claims that he was punished. Again, the order in the Navi would be difficult because this is post what people consider to be the punishment of Gehazi, the two other stories that I mentioned before where Gehazi is punished. Yativ Rabbi Yirmiyahu kamed Rabbi Zera, yativ kamar, tir kodesh baruch hu, that zi nachal mi beit kodesh hakodeshim, that there's going to be a river that's flowing out of the kodesh hakodeshim, Alav kominei migadim, and on it will be grown all sorts of delicacies. The way Rashi translates it is kominei perot mitukim, sweet fruits. So it's delicacies in the sense of these wonderful fruits that are going to grow by this river that flows out of the Kodesh HaKodeshim. We've spoken about this in other contexts, and the Agadata, the Psukim in Yechezkel, as well as in Zechariah, seem to support this idea. In the future, there will be a river that runs out of the Kodesh HaKodeshim that will begin as a trickle and then get bigger and bigger as it moves further away from the Kodesh HaKodeshim. Shenemar, balanachal yaleh asvato mize umize. So the nachal that will emerge on its banks on either side, koletz ma'achal, it will have all these fruit trees, fruit-bearing trees, lo yivol alehu, its leaves will never wither, they will never dry out or die. Below yitom perio, and its fruits will never not be there. They will not stop. Chodoshav Yivaker, monthly it will provide production. Kimeimav mina migdash heima yotzim, because the waters emerge from the migdash, which means that they have, I'll call it a holiness or a magical power to them, which is that they provide these trees with sustenance that's not normal. I mean, it's nisi, it's miraculous in nature. Vaya periyod machal, and its fruits will be for consumption. Valeyu litrufa, and its leaves will be medicinal or curative in nature. Amrle hausaba. So this elderly individual says, yiyasher. The equivalent of what we tend to say today, which is yasher koach. Really, the word probably is yiyasher kochacha, that Hashem should straighten or put your strengths to the right purposes. And that's what we wish somebody who engages in a mitzvah, that they should continue to put their strengths towards doing things that are right or on the right path. So when he says here, there is a girsa, you can see an issue if you go back to Brachot, whether the girsa should be Yud Shin Resh or Yud Yud Shin Resh. Is it Yasher or Yi Yasher? That's the question in the girsa. V'chein Amar Rabbi Yochanan. And over here you can see the Gra has an aleph, we have it in parentheses, takes out the next word, Yi Yasher. The Saba says, Shkoyach, V'chein Amar Rabbi Yochanan. So did Rabbi Yochanan say. So now, Amrale Rabbi Yirmi Rabbi Zera, Ki Ai Gavna Mechsek Afgiruta. So once again here, it's not clear how to read everything that's going on over here. You could say, Rabbi Yirmi is saying to Rabbi Zera, Rabbi Yirmi was speaking to Rabbi Zera, and then this Saba said something, and then Rabbi Yirmi is possibly querying of his Rebbe over here and saying, is that which the Saba did a problem of Afgiruta? Did he do something wrong here? And that would be considered to be like the apikoris, the apiruta, or he could be making a statement of fact, which is, that's really apiruta, that's problematic how he said it. So that's another possibility. Now, what was problematic with what he did? There's a number of options as to what the problem is. One of them is, Amalei Saba Yasher. The elderly individual says, great job, what you said is right. You have Rabbi Yirmiya making a comment before Rabbi Zera, and this Saba is coming along and giving him validation. Why would the Saba say, oh, you're doing a great job, great statement? If somebody who is clearly of a higher erudition knowledge than you makes a statement, you go, yeah, great, that was perfect, what you said is good. He doesn't need your validation. He, of course, what he's saying makes sense, or he is at a different level. Your approval is meaningless, or almost, and apkiruta, when you go and give him a validation. That's one possibility, is that the Saba was validating, and he's not the right person to be validating someone who's of greater stature than him. The other possibility is, Amalei Saba Yasher, great job, V'chein Amar Rabbi Yochanan. And Rabbi Yochanan agrees with you. So over here, the problem might be that he put himself before Rabbi Yochanan. He didn't say to him, oh, Rabbi Yochanan says the same thing, Yasher. Rather, he put himself first. That's what the Yad Ramah suggests as one possibility, is that he shouldn't have said, I agree, or I think what you're saying is right. And so does Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan's validation should have come before his validation. So that might have been the problem. If you have the girsa of Yasher in there, then there may not be an issue at all, which is the Saba says Yasher, and he says, can it be Rabbi Yochanan Yasher? Rabbi Yochanan also says or validates this type of answer, but then it would take away the sting of what he was saying, and it wouldn't be a problem, except for what Rashi says. And Rashi then says that the problem here is how he addressed Rabbi Yochanan. He says, yeah, share what you did was good. Venom Rabbi Yochanan, yeah, share. But he didn't address Rabbi Yochanan as Mori Rabbi. And so that was the problem, that he didn't give the proper veneration towards Rabbi Yochanan. And that's the third possibility is what he was asking about. So that's Rabbi Yirmiya. After he said something, he took offense to the way the Saba presented it for the one of the three possibilities that we noted. And then he asks, or either tells or asks Rabbi Zera that this is Afkiruta. So Amar Lei, Rabbi Zera responds to him and says, hi, hi, siyua kamisai elacha. Don't take it personally. He's supportive of you. You can't, in this case, take offense to someone who is not disagreeing or dismissing what you're saying. He's agreeing with what you're saying. And maybe you could argue that what he is doing, maybe he didn't say it in the best fashion, but his intent is clear over here, which is to uphold what you're saying, and to give validation to what you're saying. So don't be so makpid, or don't consider that to be a afkiruta. It doesn't look like afkiruta. Whether you say that the reason is that he put his name first instead of putting Rabbi Yochanan first, whether it's because he didn't say Mori Rabbi, but he still said Rabbi Yochanan, and he was validating what you were saying, or whether he was just validating, then why should he be validating? Nevertheless, he is validating. It's a positive statement. And therefore, we don't worry about it. But, he says, Ella Yishmielach, if you heard of something about Afkiruta, ha Shmielach. This is what an Apikoros is. Yadiyoti Rabbi Yochanan, Kadorish. Rabbi Yochanan was Doresh, Atir Kosh Baruch Hu Lavi Avanim Tovot, Umargaliyot Shein Shloshim, Al Shloshim Amot. In the future, Kosh Baruch Hu is going to bring these precious stones, these jewels, that are going to be blocks that are 30 Amot by 30 Amot. This is a Gemara we saw in Bava Batra and the stories of Rabbi Bar Bar Chana. Similar Gemara brought over there with the same conclusion. And then he carves into these blocks a opening that is 10 amot by 20 amot. Umamidam bishare Yerushalayim. Then he makes them into the gates to Yerushalayim. So the gates to Yerushalayim are going to be 10 by 20 amot, which was the standard shire that we see in the time of Bayit Sheni. That's the description that the Gemara gives, Mishnayot give for the size of the shearim. Just now they're going to be made out of precious stones rather than stone. Shneamar, in the pasuk that was found in what would have been last week's Haftorah, as well as the one of the Shivta and the Chemta, Rani Akara, over there the pasuk says, Samti kadkod shimshotayich ushi'arayich lavneagdach, and I will make your windows out of rubies, and your gates out of beryl. And all of your borders will be precious stones. As Rashi interprets it, Shimshotayach is from the word Shemesh, that brings lights in, which are windows. And Shearayach, Avneach Dach, are things that are carved, stone that is carved out or hewn, that make up the entranceways or the gates. Ligleg Alav Oto Tamid. One of the students there laughed about it. He says, Amar Hashto Kibiata Detziltol Alomish Kachina. Today, we can't even find a precious stone the size of the small egg of a small bird, whether it's a hummingbird or some small bird. We can't even find a precious stone that size. That would be big. Kulei hai mishkachinon. We're going to find something of this size. I mean, it just seems impossible. It seems illusionary, inconceivable that there would be such a precious stone of that size. The Yabim, after some time, Ifliga Svinato Bayam. They were out in the ocean, and Ifliga means either they got lost or they were stranded out in the water. Something happened that they were in a precarious position or far out in the ocean where they couldn't see any land. They were just looking out at the horizon. Chazino, the Malachi Asheret, the Kamenasre, Avanim Tovot, Umar Giliyot. And he sees that the Malachim, the angels, are carving, chiseling out these precious stones and jewels. Amrlahu hani the man. So this Talmid asked the Malachi Asheret, what are you doing this for? Amrei atira kosh brochu hamidam bishare Yerushalayim. In the future, kosh brochu is going to put these in the gates to Yerushalayim. Ki hadar ashkeche the Rabbi Yochanan. So upon his return, he finds Rabbi Yochanan. Tiyoti v'kodorish. And he is sitting there and being doresh. Whether he's doresh the same drasha, or simply that he is being Doresh. Amar lei, Rebbe, Drosh, Ulechane Elidrosh. You should be Doresh, and your Drashot are the proper Drasha, or it's great for you to be Doresh, because you know what you're saying. Kashem Shemarta, Kach Raiti. What you had said before, which I had thought was not true, now I saw with my own eyes, and now I know for sure that what you're saying is true. Amar lo, Reka, he says, empty one. Im lo Raita, lo Emanta. If you had not seen it, you wouldn't have believed it. Malagleg adirei chachamim ata. You are someone who makes fun of, dismisses, and makes light of the words of the chachamim. Yahabe Ene took one look at him, but so galsha etzemot, and he made him into a pile of bones. The great Rashi extracts it over here. Another place says that he literally died from that. Gal etzemot means that the body or the flesh of the individual is consumed, and he's just left as a pile of bones. He died because of the ayin hara, that Rabbi Yochanan gave him. Find this in other places. Here you can see the cross-reference to the Gemara in Shabbat and Bamei Medikim. Rabbi Shimon Yochai has a similar power or similar things happen when you offend Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. You have this by Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, but Rabbi Yochanan also takes a look at Reish Lakish and he dies as well. So here's people who offend these tash very, very powerful Chachamim. They take a look at you, you don't end up in a good place. Now over here, Rabbi Yochanan makes a point that is very important, which is that there is a difference between seeing something and hearing something. The expression that goes today, which is seeing, is believing. That when one person sees something, they're more want to believe that item than if they hear about it. So you could know something in your head. You could have be told information and believe it. But then if you see something, it's much more impactful and you believe it much more. That means if you're looking at a chair here in this room and we're speaking about belief in God, so even though you believe in God, you have all those intellectual and things that you've heard that make you believe in God, nevertheless, it's easier for you to believe that there's a chair than there is a God because the chair is visible to you. Over here, the student has that problem. When he sees something, he believes it. When he hears it, he doesn't believe it. And that's a problem because much of our faith is premised on believing without seeing. Have that problem in last week's parsha with Noach. Noach, it says, with regards to getting into the Teva, it says that Noach gets into the Teva mipnei mehababul, because of the rains of the waters of the Mabul. Rashi over there says, Noach miktenei ha'emunah, that Noach was really not a full believer. Hemin velo hemin. He believed and didn't believe, and he only got into the Teva after the rains forced him into the Teva. Can you imagine? He believed God. For 120 years, he's building an ark because there's a flood coming. When the flood comes, he's unwilling to get into the ark until the waters push him into the ark. How could it be? If he spent his whole life dedicated, or a large part of his life dedicated to building this ark and to believing that God said there's going to be a flood, then when it starts to rain, you get in the ark. What is he waiting for? Why did he wait? So over there, the Stipler in the Birkat Peretz notes that it is a phenomenon, which is there is this separation between when you hear something and when you see something. Hearing something does not leave that type of imprint on the individual where they really believe it or has that deep impact. When they see it, it has a deep impact. That's what's going on with Noach. Noach believed. He knew that there was a flood coming. But that was in his chushat seichel, in his intellectual realm. It didn't reach the emotional realm where it was something that he felt and believed entirely. It took him seeing the Mabul for him to really believe that it was going to happen. And that's what Rashi says, Miktanei Emunah, that there's a problem with that. Now, it's not just the Emunah, it's a reality. The other example he brings is by Moshe Rabbeinu, discussed this in the Gemara in Shabbat, that when Moshe Rabbeinu gets word of the fact that Bnei Yisrael are worshipping an eagle down below, God gives him the information at the top of the mountain. It says that people have gone astray, they're worshipping a golden calf. So Moshe hears that, and then he pleads with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. He goes down to the base of the mountain, and then he sees the Egel, and he smashes the Luchot. Why didn't he smash the Luchot when he got the information at the top of the mountain? He had the information already. Why does he wait till he comes down to the bottom of the mountain? The truth is, it could be because he wanted to make an impact on Bnei Yisrael. He didn't need to just break the Luchot, he wanted to have an impact. But the Marsha there says something along the lines of what we're saying now, which is that even though Moshe knew it at the top of the mountain, it still didn't have that deep emotional impact. Like when you see them doing it and dancing around the ego, that finished him off and then he dropped the luchot or threw the luchot down depending on which midrash you follow. But you see there, the impact of seeing is very different than hearing. And our challenge, and this is what Ryokan is saying to this Talmid, is to bring a unity between these items. That which we know in our minds and our intellectual realm should then have impact on our emotional realm and that we act based on that which we know. And that's very, very important because so much of our life and our religious experience is knowing things, but yet we don't act on them. We can know something and yet you'll do the wrong thing anyway, even though you know it's wrong, even though you know you're not supposed to do it because your emotional side overtakes you and you're unable to apply what's in the intellectual realm to the emotional realm or what's in the seichel to the lev. And that is really the challenge. And that's what Rabbi Yochanan says to this Talmid. It's only because you saw it, you believed. That means that you really don't believe in the Mesorah. You don't believe in what the Chachamim are telling you. That's a huge deficit, because the Chachamim are giving you a Mesorah Mihar Sinai, that's Torah Misinai, Torah Shebaal Peh, and your denial of that, unless you see it, means that you really don't believe in that Mesorah of Torah Shebaal Peh. And that's a huge failure, because if you don't see it, you're not going to believe. That means that the whole Torah Shebaal Peh for you is always a question mark. It's always something that you are not sure about, because you need verification, and that means that you're really not accepting the Mesorah or accepting the Chachamim's part in that Mesorah. And that's why what he did was so grave or so problematic, and that's why Rabbi Yochanan gets upset at him. All right, Meitavei, we have a question about Rabbi Yochanan's Agadic interpretation. Over here it says, V'aleichetchem komimiyut. The Kodesh Baruch Hu says, I'll bring you back to the land, and you will be komimiyut, upstanding or rising high. Rabbi Meir Omer, Matayim Ama, komimiyut means that you will be the height of 200 amot, like two heights of a Adam Rishon. Adam Rishon, according to the Agadah, was Mi Shemayim Ad Aretz. After the sin, HaKadosh Baruch Hu came in Mi Atol HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He pushed him down and shrunk him down to Me'amot. Shnemar B'Tashit Alai Kapecha. Hashem, you placed your hand on me and pushed me down. And the Gematria of Kaf is 100. And so the Gemara says that he pushed him down with his hand, until he was at that level of 100 amot. So now, if you're a komiyut, which is in plural, it's two heights of Adam Rishon, which would be then 200 amot. You'll be 100 amot tall, keneged heichal v'kotolav. Keneged heichal and its walls. Shneamar, Dick says there, asher banenu kinitim migdolim ebinureihem, that a son should be like plants that are really grown up in their young years, in their youth. Benotenu kisaviot mechutavot tavnei deichal, and our daughters should be like cornerstones that are cut for the structures of the heichal, the great palaces or migdash. It takes from that the measurements of the heichal will have impact on the heights of the individual, which is that the heichal in its length, Rashi goes through the calculation that it is 100 amot long, that will define the heights of the individual. In either case, you have a problem now. If you have people that are 100 amot tall or 200 amot tall, how are they entering through gates that are only 20 amot tall? That's quite a bent over, maybe even crawling or being on your stomach to get through there. You're not going to get through a doorway that's 20 amot high. So that's the stira to Rabbi Yochanan. Marseilles, ki kama Rabbi Yochanan, the Tvei de Bezika. Rabbi Yochanan was not speaking about the entranceways, the gateways, but rather the windows that are for Bezika over here, means airflow, Rashi adds in for light. They are openings in the wall for light and air. They're going to be 20 amot tall. So in essence, the wall will not be really be a wall, because there'll be these huge openings in the wall for light and for airflow through it. So Rabbi Yochanan was speaking about that, not the actual gateways of Yerushalayim, which will have to be much higher in order to accommodate the heights of the individuals at that time. My valeu de trufa. What is meant that its leaves will be medicinal or curative in nature? In order to cure something with regards to the mouth. To cure the opening down below. So now, it's not clear what is being said in this statement. But the Gemara then brings Itmar, Rashi has a girsa of Nami. Itmar Nami, we have similarly a machloket Amoraim, where Chizki Amar Latir Pe Ilmim, it's in order to release or free the mouth of those that are mute, and that you'll be curative in those that will be able to speak now who couldn't speak before. Bar Kapar Amar Latir Pe Akarot, those that women that could not give birth before will now be able to give birth, so that's the Pe Shomato. If you have the Girsa of Rashi, which is Itmar Nami, then that would be the explanation of the previous line of the Gemara as well, which is that, just like we have these Amoraim arguing, it would be the same argument they had before. If you eliminate the word Nami from the Gemara, you could still say the same thing we're saying now, and that seems to be the way that Rashi reads it. Although, you could then argue that it's not clear what the Peshamala and the Pelamata is, and then you could argue that their explanation is different then this explanation, because it's not Itmar Nami. They also say it's just Itmar. They do say. And then you don't necessarily have to correlate the two, and then you can say Peshamala and Peshamata could mean something else. Alright. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, the Trufa Mamash. It will literally be medicinal nature. My the Trufa. What does that mean? That it's going to be medicinal or curative in nature. Shmo Bar Nachmani Amar, The Torah Panim Shel Balei HaPeh. It's going to be for the appearance of those that use their mouth. We're going to see in 1 second that those that use their mouth, and we saw this actually yesterday, are those that learn Torah. So these are Talmidei Chachamim, whose appearance has been hurt by their dedication to Torah. And that is the next line of the Gemara. Darish Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Simon, Kol HaMashchir Panav Al Divrei Torah. Whoever blackens, quote-unquote, his face over the learning of Torah, B'Olam HaZeh, in this world, Kodesh Baruch Hu Mav'ik Zivav Le'Olam Haba. Hashem creates a radiance about him in the Olam Haba. So here, the person has lost their, quote-unquote, good looks, or has a pale appearance to them, because they've dedicated their life to Torah, that will be cured, quote-unquote, the Olam Haba, which means that Hashem will reward them in the Olam Haba, that here where their appearance is dark and pale and not radiant, will then be radiant the Olam Haba. And Rabbi Yochanan, then the statement before, where he says, Aleu Trufa, that they will be curative or medicinal in nature, is that the Chachamim will be able to eat these leaves, and then it will give them a radiance, even though they've dedicated themselves to Torah. And that, obviously, is connected to the Kedusha that emanates from the Kodesh HaKodeshim. Remember, this river is a river that's flowing from the Kodesh HaKodeshim. So that Kedusha, that spark of Kedusha, will give them that radiance that is lost because of their self-sacrifice, in a sense, to Limud HaTorah. Shneamar, Mareu Kalibonon Bachur Karazim. His countenance is like that of Lebanon. Excellent, like the cedars, probably referring both times to the Arazim of the Lebanon, so they both probably are a reference to the beautiful and strong cedars of Lebanon. And then it continues, Chiko Mamtakim Bikulo Machmadim. His mouth is sweet, and he is wonderful and lovely. And Rashi knows that's contrasted where, earlier on, it was described as Shchorot Kel Rav. They're dark like the raven. Which it said earlier in the Pasuk Rosho, Ketem Paz, Kutzotav, Tadalim, Shchorot, Ka'urev. So there he's described as being like the raven or dark and black. And over here he's described as being like the countenance of the cedars of Lebanon, which continues as Kikomam Takim, Kolom Achmadim, that he's all sweet and pleasant to be around. So the contrast between that of the Orev and that of the Mamtakim is what Rashi notes as the proof text over here. Whoever starves himself over Divrei Torah B'Olam HaZeh, Kodesh Baruch Hu Mazbi'o L'Olam Haba. Hashem satisfies him or provides for him in Olam Haba. So now, Mar'iv Atzmo over here doesn't have to literally mean starve in the sense of lack of food. It just means that this person doesn't enjoy the pleasures of this world. Someone who denies himself the pleasures of this world in order to dedicate himself to Torah, then Kodesh Baruch Hu will satisfy him in the Olam Haba. Shenemar, Yirvun Mideshin Beitecha B'Nachal Adanecha Tashkeim. They shall be fully satisfied with the fatness or the plentifulness of your house, and you shall make them drink from the river of your pleasures. So that is the reward. Rashi over here suggests, he says, Amar li Rabbi de la Elmina, before that it's written, Ma'ikra, Mari Binina, de Mar Ivet Atzmo, about someone who is starving themselves or withholding themselves from pleasures, v'kamar. And then it says afterwards that Hashem will take care of them, le'olam haba. The question is, what is this reference that Rashi is making? Many point out it's the psukim that are before, which are, tzidkatocha k'yarei kel mishpatecha tom rabba, adam u'bohema toshi Hashem. That your righteousness is like the great mountains, your judgments are great and deep, Shem brings salvation and preserve man and animal, which is found two psukim beforehand, which Chazal and other places speak about the poverty and difficulties that people experience in life, and therefore they see the juxtaposition of these psukim as being connected. Whereas the Yad Ramah says over here that the word deshen does not mean fat, but rather dashen, which is afar, dirt or ashes. And therefore, the two halves of the Pasuk actually teach you that, which is the first part of the Pasuk is the one who is satisfied or given afar, then in the end, they will get the pleasures of Nachal Adanecha Tashkim. Ke'atar Abdimi, Amar Atira Kodesh Baruch Hu, Litein Lechot Tzadik V'Tzadik, Melo Omtso. In the future, Kodesh Baruch Hu is going to give a fistful to every Tzadik. Shneamar, Baruch Hashem, Yom Yom, Yom Aslanu, Akel Yeshuatenu Selah. that Hashem should be blessed, who daily bears our burden, the God of our salvation. So now over here, the Gemara learns the word yamas, not really to bear the burden, but amos, to give a fistful. Can you say such a thing? Who measured out the waters in the palm or the hollow of his hand, and marked out the heavens with a span. Or, the way that the Gemara is learning it is, the Rashi notes this, that Zeret refers to the pinky, and the Shalom refers to the thumb. And then the Mayim and Shemayim means that the heavens, or the waters of the earth, are the span between the thumb and the pinky of HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kibiyakol. So, if the entire world, or the entire Shemayim, is the distance between Hashem's pinky and his thumb, then how can he give a fistful of this benefit to the tzaddikim if it's bigger than the world itself? Amar, my time out, l'shkichak v'agadato. If you showed up more often when we were learning agadato, not just when we were learning halacha, you wouldn't have this question. Damri b'marova mishmei the Rava bar Mari. They say over from Eretz Yisrael, in the name of Rava bar Mari, atid akor zbroku l'tein l'chol tzaddik v'tzaddik gimel me'ot v'asara olamot. That every tzaddik will receive 310 worlds. Shenemar, l'anchil olavai yesh v'otzroteim amalei. That I will cause those that are beloved to me to inherit wealth, and I will fill their treasures. The Gemara says, yesh, b'gematria tlat mea v'asarave. That yesh, or shai, in gematria is 310. That one means, l'anchil olavai yesh. I will grant inheritance to those that are beloved to me, yesh. The Gemara says, yesh means 310 olamot. So then that would solve the problem. Where is HaKadosh Baruch Hu going to give the individual of this? Each individual is going to have 310 worlds. So then the fistful of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they'll be able to store in those places. Obviously all of this is agadic kibiyachol mashalim that we need to interpret. We can't take all of this literally. Tanya Rabbi Meir Omer, midida shadam modet, modedim lo. Or the alternate girsa would be midah adam modet ba modedim lo, that the midah that he does, he will be given, or this is otherwise what we know as midah keneged midah. Dave, it says b'sasa b'shalcha terivena, by measure and through the exile terivena, you dealt with them or you repaid them. The Gemara sees this in other places being a drusha that they have to fill up or use up all of their merits until the point where they're going to be sent into exile, which means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu repays them midah keneged midah. Amar Rabbi, the Gemara takes out the word Yeshua, Yechef Shalomar Kain, is it possible to say this? Adam notein malei umsoda ani ba'olam hazeh. Person gives a fistful of benefit to a poor person in this world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu notein lo malei umsoda olam haba. Then Hashem gives him a full fistful the olam haba. Raktiv, Shemayim Bezeret Tikein, the same pasuk that we quoted before, which would present the problem, is how is he able to manage that gift of a fistful of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if from Hashem's thumb to his pinky is the same extent as the whole world? Bata, Yomer Kein? And he says, you don't say that? Ezu Midah Meruba, which is the greater? Midah Tova, Meruba, or Midah Puranut? And when Hashem wants to do good or he wants to do bad, which of those exceeds? So the Gemara says, Avi Omer, midah tova miruba mibidah prunanut. We always say that good is better than bad, or when Hashem wants to reward, he gives more than when he wants to punish. That we see in the Aseret HaDibrot, where it says there, by punishment, the ador revi'i, whereas when it comes to reward, it goes ad elef or alapayim dorot, to 1,000 or 2,000, which means that the relationship is around 1 to 500. So the good that Hashem bestows is 500 times that of the punishment of the bad that he bestows. Dave, and it says, Vayitzav shchakim imal, vildalte shamayim patach, that Hashem put the stones or the things above, vildalte shamayim patach, and then he opened up the doors of heaven, vayimteraleim man leechol, and then he poured down or rained down upon them man to eat. And over there, it's speaking about in Tehillim, the story of the sojourn of the Israel after they left Mitzrayim in the Midbar. Gemara Yoma darshans this with regards to the man, that there are windows in the sky. This has to do with the belief that we thought before, that the firmament is a solid area that is between the Mayim HaTachtonim, Mayim HaElyonim, and that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was above that. In order to bestow on the world below or to rain on the world below, you have to open up the doors of the Mayim HaElyonim in order for it to allow it to go through the firmament. The same thing over here, they're doing it in a figurative sense, but the same way that the Torah calls man vayam ter, that it rains down man from the heavens. So they open up the doorways of heaven to rain down. Ubemidat pornotu, Omer, by punishment it says, Parshanoach, when Hashem rains down upon the people, it says, Verubodah Shemayim Niftachu, that the skylights of heaven opened up. So you see there, when Hashem wants to bestow good, He opens up the doors of heaven in order for the man to come down. When He wants to rain and bring a mabul, He only opens up the skylights of heaven. So you see that there's a much greater opening that is done for the good than that is done for the bad. And the Marsha points out that it also is the fact that here Hashem opens up the doors. Over there, the Shemayim, or the windows, skylights of Shemayim, open by themselves. So the Midah Tovah is brought by HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself, whereas the Midah Peraniyot, as if happens itself, or is done without the direct intervention of Hashem. Now, B'Midah Peraniyot K'tiv, here is a pasuk quoted from Yeshayahu, which happens to be the end of the Haftorah that we just read this week of Hashemayim Kisi, because it was Rosh Chodesh, that was the end of the Haftorah. And they should go out and look at the carcasses, the cadavers of the people who have transgressed against me, who have sinned against me, for their rot will never cease, and their fire will never be extinguished, and they should be a loathing or disgusting to all flesh. And Gemara says, "V'lo adam moshit etzbo b'ur b'olam hazeh." Any person who puts their finger in this world next to the fire, they immediately miyad nichveh, immediately is burnt and recoils. You're not going to be able to burn something over and over again, because a human being, when they come close to the fire, they're burnt immediately, and there's nothing more to burn once you've burnt it. So how could it be that isham lo tichveh, that they will never be extinguished? It'll be there forever. How could you have that? Human beings can't survive more than a little fire. B'olam hazeh. Ella. What you have to say is, K'shem shenotein HaKadosh Baruch Hu koach b'rishayim l'kabel puranatam. Just like Hashem gives the rishayim, we call it, many lives, in order for their punishment to be met out upon them, that means that they'll be consumed in a fire, but Hashem will give them the wherewithal not to be consumed, so they can be consumed again by the fire. Kach noten HaKadosh Baruch Hu koach b'tzadikim l'kabel tovatan. Similarly, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives the capacity in the tzaddikim to take in the good that Hashem wants to bestow upon them. So here, instead of answering like we did before about the omes, the fistful that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to grant to the individual and say, oh, don't worry about it, the tzaddikim had 310 worlds of capacity to deal with it. Rather, over here, the Gemara suggests that the tzaddikim had the capacity to deal with it because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to give them the capacity to deal with that goodness. Just like the Rishayim were given the capacity to have their punishment be met out on them over and over again, so to the Tzaddikim will be given the capacity to take a fistful from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, meaning all the bracha that is bestowed upon them. The idea being that our conceptions of these things in this world cannot be compared to the conceptions of them in the Olam Haba. That what is true for the human being here is just not true for the individual of the Olam Haba. The other world is a different experience than this world, and then we can't use the measures or the imagery that we use in this world because it just doesn't suffice, because human beings, that when they're released from their bodies, in a sense, the nishamot, or these individuals, have the capacity to have punishments or rewards be much greater than they do in this world. Rabbi Kiva added in the Mishnah that another person that's not Zochel Olam Haba is someone who reads outside texts. Tana B'Sifrei Tzedukim. What does it mean, Sfarim HaChitzonim? So here we have a Tana that suggests, or Breita that suggests, that is the books of the Tzedukim, which are Kofrim Mikel Chai. This is Kfira, individuals who are definitely not on the way of the Torah, and their books, whether it means utilizing something that's written by them, but is our Torah, or is this their interpretation of the Torah? Either way, that's considered to be problematic and denies a person the Olam Haba because It takes them off the path or the proper way they should behave. V'yosef amar, b'sefer ben sirah, nami asur l'mikre. Even in the sefer ben sirah, one is not permitted to read. We're going to see later on in today's daf that Rav Yosef backs away from this statement as being a complete statement, but he does say you have to be discerning about what you read from Sefer Ben Sirah. The only reason that's important is because the Gemara, in numerous places, quotes Sefer Ben Sirah. So we see that the Tanaim and Amoraim were familiar with Sefer Ben Sirah, and they quote it. The Gemara actually quotes it as if it's quoting a Pasuk sometimes, and quotes Sefer Ben Sirah. And it's not found in any Pasuk, it's actually a Memra from Sefer Ben Sirah. As far as the Sefer Ben Sirah is concerned, we know it existed because of the Gemara's mention of it, as well as the Gemara's quoting from it. But we did not have the Sefer Ben Sirah until the discovery and the processing of the Cairo Geniza, where Salman Schechter was able to, through that process, put together the Sefer Ben Sirah, which was found in the Cairo Geniza, in order to get the Sefer Ben Sirah. Sefer Ben Sirah is believed to be written in the period time of the Bayit Sheni, so it's in the time of the early Tanaim, and includes a number of items, including songs, poetry, sayings, and pidgamim of the Chachamim, as well as advice of the Chachamim, something akin to maybe Mishlei, where there are all these refrains that are important pieces of information or advice about how to conduct one's life. Again, the Chachamim were very familiar with the book. It seems to be that it was read by the Chachamim, which is therefore surprising that Rabbi Yosef would say that one should not read the Sefer Ben Sirah. But in essence, what Rabbi Yosef is saying is that the Sefer Ben Sirah cannot be accepted at face value. You cannot just read whatever it is in there and then accept what is written in there. The interesting aspect of Sefer Ben Sirah is that the Gemara only quotes one part of Sefer Ben Sirah, which are these Mishlei-like statements of Sefer Ben Sirah. It doesn't quote the other aspects of the poetry and song and other things that are mentioned there. So that's a question of whether they believe that was the problematic part or that that was not the acceptable part. It's not clear here from Rabbi Yosef's statement, and we'll see a later statement of Rabbi Yosef, what he thought was the parts to use and not use, but he definitely thinks you need to be discerning in nature. Akin to the story that Gemara brings in Chagiga with Rabbi Meir and Acher. Rabbi Meir learns from Elisha ben Abuya, his Rebbe, and over there, even though you're not supposed to learn from someone who is an apikores, someone who is problematic in nature, nevertheless, Rabbi Meir says, I ate the fruit and I spit out the refuse, or I threw away the skins. I'm able to get from Acher what I need without being influenced by his Torah or by his views of the Torah. Nevertheless, he's still, quote-unquote, punished for that, the Gemara says, because in Mishnayot, Rabbi Meir is the anonymous author of the Mishnah. We say, Stam Mishnah, Rabbi Meir, because of that, as well as the fact that most of the time, the halacha is not like Rabbi Meir. So the Gemara is somewhat critical of what Rabbi Meir did. Rabbi Yosef is also expressing a similar sentiment, maybe, to Sefer Ben Sirah, which is that you have to be discerning and pick out what you take from it. You can't take it at face value, everything. Amalei Abaye, so the student Abaye says, my taima. What's the reason you think that you shouldn't be reading Ben Sirah? From Abaye's question, you're going to see that Abaye was clearly familiar with the Sefer Ben Sirah and had been reading Sefer Ben Sirah. Because he quotes, quote after quote, from Sefer Ben Sirah. So it's clear that he was familiar and did read the Sefer Ben Sirah. Ilema, Shom Deftiv Bey, is it because it's written in it? Lo tintosh gildana mi'udnei, don't skin a fish from its ear. The lo ezo mashche lechavla, so that its skin doesn't go to waste. Ela tzali yatei binura, roast it on the fire. Ve'ichu bey, tartin gritzin, and then you'll be able to eat it with two loaves of bread. That's one possibility of what it means, which is that it's telling you, don't waste the skin of the fish. If you start to skin the fish or pull away the skin from the ear, quote-unquote, of the fish, then you will ruin the skin and the skin will be worthless to you. If you keep the skin on the fish and roast it with the skin, then you can use the skin as a spread to put on bread afterwards. So you can keep the value or the benefits of the skin if you just leave it intact and not bother it. The other possibility, as Rashi notes over here, is that don't skin the fish from its ear, because the ear is the normal place where you skin the fish from. That's why it writes the udnei, because the darko shodag that chitav shetomi has no. So it's mentioning the ear of the fish, not because you'll ruin it if you pull it off from there, Rather, that's the normal place they start to skin the fish. Either way, you should leave it on. Rabbi says back, you think because Sefer Ben Sirach contains this advice, which is silly, imi pashte, if you're telling me you take it literally, b'doraita namiktiv. It says in the Torah, lo tashkit et etza. The one may not waste resources. It says when you lay siege to the city, don't destroy the trees or the fruit-producing trees that are there. Don't cut down and desolate the area around where you are laying siege. So you see the Torah is saying, Baal Tashkit, don't waste things. So Sefer Ben Sirach is telling you a piece of advice. Don't waste the skin of the fish. If you just see the statement of Ben Sirach, not as being literally, but figuratively, Orach Ara Kamash Malan. He's teaching us proper behavior in areas of Derech Eretz, which is a euphemism for the intimate relations between a husband and wife, which is suggesting that lo yivol adam et ishto shelo kedarka. A person should not have relations with his wife shelo kedarka, because it's not the normal way to do it. It's unpleasant. It is also a waste. Or, in essence, you should behave the normal way that people behave. And so in that way, it's also a figurative expression. It's a piece of advice which we would agree with as well. So why would you dismiss Sefer Ben Sirach with this type of advice? Ela mishum dichtiv, or you think it's because of this saying? Bat la'via, a person who has a daughter, matmonet shav, it's a worthless treasure, mipachada lo yisham balayla, because of the fear about her, he won't be able to sleep at night anymore. The Masha notes, don't be deceived that it is a great gift by the fact that maseya deha, her output, that what she does belongs to you, because it comes as a package deal. And so that gift also comes with a huge burden that comes with it. Bikat nuta, in her youth, shematit pata. Maybe she will be seduced when she is still young. Binaruta, when she reaches the age of puberty, before she's a bigaret, shematizne. Maybe she will have an affair. Bagra, when she gets old enough where she's now mature, Shema lo tinaseit. Maybe she won't get married. Niseit, when she gets married, Shema lo yela banim. Maybe she won't have children. Hizkina, when she gets older, Shema tasek shafim. Maybe she'll get involved in sorcery or witchcraft. So you see here that it's just worry after worry with regards to a daughter. Rabbi says, that saying of Beis Sefer Ben Sirach, is that why you think it's not a good book or people should be engaged in it? Harabanan ami amrua. Rabbanan say something similar. It's impossible for the world to exist without males and females. Ashrei mi shebanav zecharim. Lucky is the one, or praiseworthy be the one who has male children. Oy lo lami shebanav nekevot. Woe is the one who has female children. We discussed this in the other context. We saw this in Baba Batra. We saw this in the Gemara in Kiddushin. We discussed it there in the context. Again, here it's not so important. The context, all he's noting is that the Chachamim have that same differentiation between a male and a female, which is that they view negatively the quote-unquote gift of a female, same way that Sefer Ben Sirach does. And maybe even for the same reasons that Sefer Ben Sirach does. But if that's the case, you can't dismiss or discard Sefer Ben Sirach over this point when the Chachamim say something similar. And this Gemara is also connected to what we saw yesterday, which is that man is made to work. Ashrei, lucky is the one whose work is in the matters of Torah. We saw the same thing with regards to other professions. Lucky is the one who has an easy and clean profession versus someone who has a different type of profession. Everybody has to work. Everybody has to make a living. Just a question of how that's going to happen. And similarly over here, everybody has children. Question of what type of children. Ela mishum dichtiv. Maybe you want to say it for this. Lo ta'il davya belibeich. Don't allow worry to creep into your heart. The gavre gibarin katal davya. Because worry slays even the strongest of men. So that's the saying in Sefer Ben Sirach. So maybe because of that you want to dismiss it. Ha, Shlomo Amra. Forget about Sefer Ben Sirach. That's already mentioned in the Mishlei. Dagabalevish Yashchena. Anxiety in the heart of man weighs him down. And then the continuation of the pasuk is V'darvar Tov Yisamchenu. But a good word makes him glad. So Yashchena is the opposite of Yisamchenu, of the opposite of Simcha. And now we have an interpretation of that word Yashchena, how to relieve that which is weighing him down. Rabbi Ami, Rabbi Yassi, Chadamar, Yissichena midato, like a samich, like Hesechadat, he should remove it from his mind, he should not think about it. Chadamar, Yissichena lacharim, from the word Sicha means to speak, that one should offload this by speaking to others. So here is first endorsement of going to a psychiatrist or psychologist to speak about your problems or discuss your problems. I mean, that offloading helps a person get rid of their worries. That Yashchena, rather than being the problem, is also indicating or hinting to the advice of how to remove that which is weighing him down. So whether these two drashot about the word Yashchena are meaning that you should remove worry from yourself, or whether you take it literally that it ruins the individual, that worry, that's the same thing that's being said by Sefer Ben Sira. So why are you critical of it? Ela mishum dichtiv mina rabim mitoch betecha, says in Sefer Ben Sira, one should prevent or not allow the multitudes to enter his house. Velo akol tavi al betecha, and you shouldn't bring everybody home. So over here, it's two stages or two statements. One is, don't let everybody just go through your house. You might have a lot of friends and partnerships, so those are the people you let into your house. You don't just let everybody into the house or anybody into your house. You have to be discerning about who you let into your house. Then secondarily, even amongst those that you do business with and friends with, don't bring everybody home. Not everybody is ra'oi to be a friend. So the Gemara here in a second will give a quote similar to this, but it seems to be that the issue is you want to have good relationships with people. And the way you have good relationships with people is to limit the number of people that you have relationships with. And even people you do have relationships with, how close that relationship will also be determinant as to whether you get into altercations with people. The fewer people that you are close with, then the less room for those types of altercations. So you have to keep certain people at an arm's length to keep simple people where you don't interact with them at all. And you could look at this, again, in an allegorical sense, which is that you have to be discerning about the influences over you and your household. What you bring into your house will influence the household. So don't bring everything into your house, whether that's people, whether that's ideas, whether that's objects. And even things that are appropriate, you still have to be discerning when you bring them into your house. And again, that can be true of people, ideas, or things as well. I think you would explain it that way. Now, Gemara says, what's the big deal about that? Rabbi Nami Amra. Rabbi said a similar refrain. So you're worried about Sefer Ben Sira, we have Rabbi saying the same thing to Tanya. Rabbi Omer, Lo'olam lo yirbe adam re'im betoch beito. A person should have so many friends in his house. Shenemar, Ish re'im li'itroeya. There are men who pretend or feign friendship. Ve'shohev davek me'ach. And sometimes there are good friends who are closer or better than even a brother. So here it speaks about these quote-unquote friends. People who draw close for their own benefit, but they don't really care about you. They're not real friends. So you see from that, that Rabbi also believes that you shouldn't be bringing in all these people. This is the thing in Sefer Ben Sira, which is meaningless, which is just made up. And that is the following. Zaldakan kurtaman. So now you'll see here that the shortest of the word here is dakan. Dakan, which in Aramaic means zakan, a beard. And then there's a prefix that tells you what type of beard it is. Zal dakan means a beard that is wispy, light, weak beard. Kurtaman is a sign of a person who is wise and insightful. Av dakan, so here again, the word is made up of dakan, which is a beard. Av means thick. So someone with a thick beard, saksan, is a fool. Nafach bekase lo tzachi. One who blows off the top, the head, or the foam of his drink, when you pour the drink and there's the foam on top, the person who blows it off is not thirsty, because if they were thirsty, they would just drink it. Amar b'maye chol lachma. Person is trying to figure out, what should I put on my bread? What should I accompany my bread? What spread? What should I eat together with it? Lachma sabmine. Take the bread away from him, because he's obviously not hungry. If he's hungry, he'd just eat the bread. He wouldn't be vacillating about what he should put on his bread. One who has a part down the middle of his beard, nobody can catch up with him. That's because that person has been thinking a lot. When he thinks a lot, he rests his chin on his hand, and that causes a part in his beard. Rashi over here says, Lo yachmilei be'ar mimutei. You will not overcome him in his slyness, his cunningness, his guile. In that this is a person who's thinking a lot, and a person who's planning and cunning in nature, and therefore you won't get ahead of him because he's put so much time into that. So these are quotes from Ben Sira, and this Abaye concludes, this must be what Rabbi Yossi is speaking about, the things that are meaningless or inappropriate, because none of this has any basis. The thickness or thinness of one's beard has no impact on the individual, as well as the split in their beard. All of these items seem to be just useless information. I'm Rabbi Yosef. Things that are good in Ben Sira, we are Doresh. And we bring them up in the public, and we say them over in the Shiurim that we give to the public. So here, Rabbi Yosef, the same Rabbi Yosef said before, that Sefer Ben Sira is the Sifrei Chitzonim, says that the good stuff we quote. And that's what I said to you before. It seems like Rabbi Yosef is following that position of Rabbi Meir, which is, you have to be discerning. So Ben Sira for everybody is not good. Because people won't know what in Ben Sira is proper and appropriate, and what in Sefer Ben Sira is meaningless. So you need someone who can discern that, and therefore it's inappropriate for people to read in Sefer Ben Sira, because it could mislead people with the items that are not necessarily true. But someone who is wise and knows what is valuable within Sefer Ben Sira can then take out from it, extract from it those good things, and pass it on to the common folk. Now, it's clear that Abaye is well-versed in Sefer Ben Sira, and so is Rav Yosef, because Abaye quoted one after the next, and Rav Yosef is about to bring a big quote from Sefer Ben Sira. So it's clear that they are familiar with the Sefer Ben Sira, but the discernment that is required over here is what Rav Yosef is saying, and then you have to then reinterpret what he said before about Sefer Ben Sira being Sifrei Chitzonim, as applying only to people who can't be discerning about what information is found in Sefer Ben Sira. And it gives an example. The example happens to include a quote that we had before, but it's a very long example, which is, Isha tova, matana tova. A good woman is a great gift. Bechek yelukim tinatein. It will be given into the bosom of the one who fears God. In that it's a reward. A reward for the yirei elukim is a great gift, which is an isha tova. Isha ra'a tsarat lebaala. A bad woman, or a bad wife, is like leprosy or tzarat for her husband. Maita kante, how do you solve the leprosy? Yigashena mi beito, you send it out of the house, v'yitrape mi tzarato, and then you'll be cured of your tzarat. So, similar to the tzarat, when a person had tzarat, he sent mi chutz la machaneh. He's thrown out of the machaneh, and then he gets cured from its tzarat and comes back to the machaneh. So here, if the bad woman or bad wife is tzarat, then you send her out, which is the equivalent of geirushin, you divorce her to get rid of the tzarat that is plaguing you. Isha yafa, ashrei bala, a person who is married to a beautiful woman, lucky is her husband, mispar yamav felim. These days are doubled because of the tremendous hana'a and enjoyment and pleasure he gets from this beautiful woman that will make his life like everlasting or make him feel good all the time. Turn your eyes away from a woman who is trying to find favor or seductive in nature. Maybe you get trapped. Maybe you get caught up in her trap. Maybe that the women are seductive in nature. Don't get caught up in the trap. Don't spend time with her husband drinking together with him. So because with a beautiful woman, many have been destroyed, but those that she's quote-unquote murdered are many. Which is here, if you drink with the husband of this woman who's seductive in nature, then you might get pulled in by this woman, and the corpses left behind by these types of situations are many, meaning that they're going down the path of adulterous affairs or seductive women is not good. The sellers of the samim or women's items are wounded or injured often because when they go into the house and they're selling to the women, many times the husbands find them alone with the woman in the house and they're upset that he's in the house together with his wife and he beats them up. So the rochel gets beaten up because of that. Although there are those that interpret it to mean that the Rochel gets involved in all these difficulties. Rabim Pitzei Rochel is not that others are injuring him, but rather he causes much sin by his being always alone together with these women, and he ends up having affairs with these women that he's selling the merchandise to. Hamargilim d'var erva, kinitzotz mavir gechelet. One who gets involved in arayot erva is like a spark that lights a coal. Over here, Rashi says something interesting about that. He says, someone is engaged in adultery, kinitzotz mavir gechelet, kishaviv hamavir et hapecham, kach kol ashelahem kala volech, that it burns up or consumes everything. Someone who's engaged in adultery loses everything. That could be both from the perspective of that they destroy their family, they destroy what they do have, but more literally, you could take it that they're going to lose everything because they're acting inappropriately. Which is actually a quote from Yirmiyahu Perek Hey, and it continues, Akein gadlu v'yashiru. That's why they became great and grew rich. It's because just like the cage is full of birds, so too, these houses are full of deceit and trickery, and that's why they've enriched themselves. This is the quote that we brought before from Sefer Ben Sira. It's a much longer piece. We're getting all the pieces to it, including this piece that was quoted before by Abaye, which is, don't allow the public into your house. And even amongst those that you do bring to your house, be discerning and not bring everybody home. You should have many people who are looking after your betterment or looking out for your good. Despite the fact that you have many people who look favorably upon you or look out for your good, nevertheless, you should only reveal your secrets to 1 in 1,000. Meaning, true friends or people that you should disclose information to should be limited. The one who sleeps in your bosom, be careful with your mouth. You should limit what you say or disclose. Al teitzar etzarat machar. Do not allow the worries of tomorrow to plague you. Ki lo teida bayeled yom. You have no idea what the next day will bring. Shem lemachar enenu. Because maybe tomorrow you're not there. Benimsa mitzter alolam she'enu shelo. And you end up worrying about something that is not your world. So that if you worry about tomorrow, then you're worrying about something that's in the future that you have no idea whether you'll be there in the future. That could be from the perspective you might pass away and never reach that next day. Or might be from the perspective that you're worrying about something that will never come about. So you need to worry about things that are here, things that are real issues. To have anxieties about things that are yet to come, the anxiety itself is problematic. It destroys your life. But the anxieties themselves are problematic because you may never get there, so the anxiety is about something that will never come about. Or the item or whatever you're thinking of or the possibility you're thinking of may never come to fruition, and then the anxiety will be for naught. And so you're going to waste your time with anxiety about things that will never be. I don't think that means you shouldn't plan to the future. I just think it means that when you plan for the future, you should think of the possibilities, but then you shouldn't be anxious and you shouldn't let the anxiety destroy your life currently about what's going to happen in the future. And we know that there's a plague of anxiety in the world today that really ruins people's lives. They're unable to move forward, unable to enjoy life because they have so many anxieties about them. Kol yemei ani ra'im. Again, we saw this at the end of Bava Batra. All the days of the ani are bad. That's a quote from Mishlei. The end of the pasuk is, "Tov lev mishte tamid." That the one who is enjoying life will always be happy. Ben Sira Omer af leilot. Not only are the days of the ani bad, even the nights of the ani are bad. So Ben Sira adds on to the pasuk in Mishlei, which is that Mishlei says that all of his days are bad, and the Ben Sira says all of his nights are bad. Bishvel gagim gago. His roof is always lower than the other roofs. We discussed this in Bava Batra. But if his roof is the lowest in the city, or when they lived on the mountains, he's further down the mountain, that means that all the water that runs off, then runs off onto his roof. If he's in the city and he's the lowest roof, all the other roofs pour their water onto his roof. Or if he's down the mountain, then all the water that runs off the mountain runs onto him. Bimarom harim in Karmo. And his vineyard is at the highest point of the mountains. He can't afford to buy something at the bottom of the mountain that's easy access. He has to buy something way up on the mountain. Therefore, mimetarga gim legago, from all the waters that flow off the other roofs land on his roof. Miapar karmo, the kramim. And his kerem, his vineyard, When it rains and the wind blows, it takes the fertilizer and the earth from his vineyard and washes it down to the other vineyards. So the people down of him are beneficiaries of whatever work he does. So in the city, he's in the lowest position. In the fields, he's in the highest position, both of which are negative. And that's what Ben Sira says, that not only his days bad, but his nights are bad. Everything that happens to him, he won't be able to sleep because all the water pouring down on his roof or all the water running through his yard or his house. And again, during the day, he's working the fields, and all that he does is somewhat for naught because it goes to the benefit of the other parties. Amar Rabbi Zera, Amar Rav, my dichtiv, what is meant by this pasuk? Now we quoted this pasuk from Mishlei, that Ben Sira interpreted. Now the Gemara itself is bringing and interpreted. What does it mean that kol yimei ani ra'im? What does it mean that all the days of the ani are bad? Elu balei tamud. These are the people that learn Gemara. Tov lev mishteh tamid. The one who enjoys life is in a mishteh all the time. Elu balei mishnah. Those are the people who learn the mishnah. The reason being that learning Gemara is hard. Learning mishnah is easy. So the one that's doing the hard thing is miserable. And the one doing the easy thing is happy. Rava amar ipcha. What are you talking about? It's just the opposite. Vainu damar misharshia mishmei de rava. Maidik tev masiya banim yad sev bahem. The one who removes the stones will be hurt by them. Elu balei mishnah. Ubokeya, the word vav doesn't appear in the pasuk. Bokeya itzeim isachein bam. The one who splits the wood will be endangered by them. Elu balei tamud. So the way Rashi explains it for us is that Mesia Manim, the one who carries a heavy burden, in the end, Yatsev will be upset or get nothing from it, because he's going to work hard but have nothing in the end. That refers to the Mishnah. On the other hand, the Bokeh Itzim, the one who splits the word, even though he's working hard, in the end, Yisachin Bam is not in danger from the word Sakana, but rather he will enjoy the comfort of them from the word Sochein, which means to nurse or to comfort. So he, Yisachin Bam, he will be the beneficiary of that. And in that way, Rabba is saying just the opposite of what Rabbi Zera suggested before, which is, in the end, the hard work pays off. It might be easier to acquire the Mishnah, it might be a nicer life, and you don't have to exert yourself, but in the end, you're left with nothing. The hard work pays off, because in the end, then you'll have something that you can paskin with, something that you can come to conclusions with, and therefore, the Balei HaTalmud are the ones that are simcha, not the Balei HaMishnah, who invested so much in the end, but have nothing to show for what they invested. All the days of the ani are terrible. That's someone who has a bad wife, meaning that it's something that is always present and always gives them difficulty and makes their life hard or miserable. The one of a merry heart is continuously feasting. It's because here the one who has a good wife, again, their daily situation, their every interaction is something that is pleasurable and positive because of the good interactions between the individuals. And therefore, that it references to an Isha Tova. And that is reiterated by the Pasuk in Mishlei, Matza Isha, Matza Tov. Person finds a wife, he's found goodness, meaning that a great relationship and a good wife leaves a person in a position of Tov, although there is an offsetting memra about a woman or a wife that is found in Kohelet, which the Gemara Brachot brings as a stira, and over there, the Gra is a beautiful reconciliation of that, but the idea generally being that when a person's faced with those difficulties, they haunt him, or they're with him all the time, and he's unable to release himself from the difficulties or the problems in the relationship. Rabbi Yada Omer, Kol Yimei Ani Ra'im, Zeistinis, all the days of the Ani are difficult, that's someone who is particular. Since they are particular, everything bothers them. Everything that comes about is a difficulty or something to overcome for them. Tov lev mishteh tamid, the one who is always happy, is feasting, zeshedato yafeh. Someone who is less particular, someone who doesn't mind things, because then things don't bother them. And so they're able to enjoy life because they're not bothered by little details or little issues that come up. B'yokan amar ko yamei ani ra'im zerachmani. All the days of the ani are difficult. That's someone who is merciful. Someone who is always enjoying life is someone who is achzari, cruel or indifferent. So here we find something that would be the opposite of what we would have thought otherwise, which is generally we'd be positive about a person who is a rahman, Someone who has sympathy, empathy towards others' pain, that's something positive. On the other hand, someone who is cruel and indifferent, we would view negatively. Yet over here, you're seeing the opposite. Now that could either be because that's just a reality. The person who is a Rahman, of course we think more positively, but then that leaves them bogged down, not only by their own difficulties, but by other people's difficulties because they care about other people. And Akhzari enjoys life, even though that's not the way to be, they do enjoy life because they just don't care about other individuals. They dismiss or run over other individuals on their way to doing whatever it is that they are doing. So that's one way to view it. The other way to view it might be that you need a certain amount of balance. Yes, being a Rahman is important, but the Rahman should not rob you of your own life and your own happiness. So Goyimani Ra'im is when someone is too much of a Rahman, such a Rahman that he's not able to enjoy life anymore because everything is bothering him. The Akhzari, again, shouldn't be an Akhzari, but a person who is completely indifferent is always going to enjoy life, but that's not the way to be. It's not about just you enjoy life and don't care about others. You care about others, but you still have to be able to enjoy life. And that might be the message that's being given over here. Yeshua ben Levi Omer, Koyimei Ani Ra'im, Ze Shedato Ktsara. That's someone who has either a short fuse or a short capacity to deal with things. That is the resilience of the individual. Rashi brings that to be manifest in two ways. One is that a person who is always worried, they're unable to manage the difficulties and the changes in life, the vagaries of life, things are always bringing the unexpected. And a person who can't manage through that is an ani, or is always in difficulty because it throws them for a loop. They don't have the resilience to deal with it. And they are miserable because they're always worrying and trying to deal with things. Whereas, someone who's resilient, someone who can deal with those unexpected things that happen, they manage life in a better way. And Rashi's other interpretation, I think, is just a derivative of that, is someone who gets angry is the ani, because everything makes him upset. He's quick to anger about things, and it makes him miserable. A person who is calm and collected can deal with the unexpected or the difficulties of life, and therefore, they're much happier in life. Is that really true, that all the days of ani are miserable? Even the ani has a respite from Shabbat and Yom Tov, where they have nicer food, when they don't have to go out to work. These are days that they really enjoy. If that's the case, how can you say, Kol Yimei Ani, all the days of Ani are Ra'im? The Gemara answers and says, En Ochanami Kedishmoel, the Amar Shmo, Shunei Veset Chilat Chol Yimei Ayim, that the beginning of problems with one's digestion or intestines comes from Shinui Veset, the changing of their normal pattern. And this is something that the Gemara parlays into other areas, and the Gemara Nida as well, which is Shunei Veset. Whenever there's a change from the normal behavior, the normal patterns of the individual, that causes sickness or difficulty for the individual. And similarly over here, when the ani, who eats sparsely all week, and doesn't have all these delicacies, all of a sudden Shabbat, where he treats his body to those delicacies, that causes him difficulty. Not just the enjoyment of it, but then he has left with the stomach aches, he's left with body unable to deal with those types of changes in behavior, changes in pattern. And that we know is true in general, many times, that if there's an extreme between the one's life during the week and during Shabbat, the Shabbat actually leaves them not feeling as good as it should because of those Shinoi Veset, which is noted here by Shmuel. And that's what it means. Kol Yimei Ani Ra'im. Okay, we're going to stop here. Five lines down on the top of Kuf Aleph Amud Aleph.